And welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. Not only visual culture, right? So we're going to talk about how we're opening up to things other than visual culture at the National Art Gallery. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. I'm in the studio tonight with two poets, Sonia Farmer and Charlotte Hene, both of whom collaborated on their projects for the National Exhibition. Sonia collaborated with Shivani Ramlishan, and Charlotte Hene collaborated with Yasmin Glinton. And there's a whole bunch of things I want to talk about. I want to talk about being in the gallery as a spoken word artist.
Yes.
And and actually visualizing that too, which yes. I think is kind of interesting, is like how you visualize that in the forms of your books. And then we were also talking about the font choices. I mean, these things that you don't... that an observer might not take for granted, but it, again, like if you're making a book, or in your case, you have the poems on the wall, it does communicate those things.
Absolutely,
really communicate
Absolutely.
Something. So
typefaces are the first thing I teach mm-hmm. my students when yeah. we design books. Mm-hmm. Part one, everyone mm-hmm. gets a typeface, and they have to go and research the history because all they know is like Times New Roman mm-hmm. on like Microsoft Word, which is like yeah. well, I think it's not default anymore; it's something else. Cambria seems to be the default, but mm-hmm. you know, and. And so they go and research it, and we take it apart, and we talk about all the parts of a letter form and how, you know, examining them up close, you see the differences between all of them, even if at first to the naked eye they seem different. Everything's mm-hmm. just a serifed font or a sans serif mm-hmm. font. Mm-hmm. And so
for people that don't know those terms, serif right. font is one that's got like this sort of curly things, mm-hmm. You know,
the little ticks at the end of the letter.
End, and sans serif is just a very a block letter,
right?
Basically.
So Helvetica, like for example, yeah. or Gil Sans,
or Arial, mm-hmm.
right? Whereas like a serif font would be Times New Roman, yeah. Garamond, Baskerville,
Palladino, mm-hmm.
Palladino. Palladino's mm-hmm. nice.
I love Palladino. Anyway,
so yeah, it's, so you can get deep, you know, like my
I'm geeking out on fonts,
which yeah. is my favorite thing. So for my piece, The Red Thread Cycle, with Shivani, I decided to set the poems all in Centaur, which is an old style typeface. And I chose it because it has these beautiful sharp serifs. So like the end of the letter forms are actually little points. Mm-hmm. And then also what I love
so
about
like
Centaur,
knives.
Yes, they also have beautiful, if you look at them like under a loop, a little magnifying glass mm-hmm. for type, you'll see that the full stops and the eye dots are little diamonds.
Oh, wow.
So they're even sharper.
So it's like you can cut yourself
yes,
on the text.
So mm-hmm. it's a beautiful typeface, and I felt like the sort of pointed edges just felt like they added a little edge mm-hmm. Yeah. to the words, which are like themselves quite sharp, right?
Yeah, they are, mm-hmm. and draw blood,
yes.
Yes, and refers to then the blood in the poems and all of the stuff.
Right.
And your mm-hmm. poem, Charlotte, was in this really. I mean, I've lost.
Speaking of sharp,
yeah, ah. like I don't know what font that was, but it's because all three of the poems are in different typefaces, and mm-hmm. so and it's really interesting because right away, before you've even read the words,
you
get an impression.
That's what they do, yeah. typefaces. Yeah. Like you can just create like a subconscious sort of signal for your readers that they may not even know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they make the words visual.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, they give the words real physicality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As poets, do you think of the words as being visual?
I do. I mean, I see them in my head.
Yes.
So then we were talking earlier about, you know, how you sit with words a long time. Often, sometimes, you know, a poem is spontaneous, and then mm-hmm. sometimes you sit with words a long time, and I liken it to, you know, walking around a room, right, until you find the door. Like you mm-hmm. just, and then mm. when it comes out, you, I'd like to take credit for that, but, you know, that comes from my partner. So, but you get an idea and you sit with it, and then when it comes, for me, they dance around in my head. They wake mm-hmm. me up at night, right? Like, and they're often attached to people, the work that I'm working
As
on right
your,
now.
Will you let me get some sleep?
Yeah.
yeah. Stop it. And some, you know, I've learned you have to get up and write.
Yes. Right.
Because if
yeah.
you don't, you either lose it or...
Or it rumbles around yeah. your brain all night. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's definitely a visual piece.
But
for me.
So when you're writing a poem, do you ever, because, you know, I would, until we started having this conversation, I would have thought it was always about sound and the sound in your mouth or the sound in your head. Mm. Would you ever select a word for how it looks as opposed to how it sounds?
I think it's both. Mm. Like it's a back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it depends. Like I'm paying more attention to sound now, but I think I always write first and try to get it on the page. I also don't like punctuation, so I just don't. I let my line breaks act as punctuation.
Oh, as a grammar person,
and the thing is, I
but that's again exactly. in poetry.
With
obviously,
poetry,
it's totally
it's
allowed.
Now, but yeah, listen, no. if I yeah, write yeah, an yeah, essay yeah. and I yeah. love, you know, I'll proofread other yeah. people's stuff. So it's good to like sort of quote as they say, know the rules to break them. But yeah, you know, it's all
absolutely.
Kinds of no, other
it's true. It's like learning how to draw to not draw,
right? But I mean, that's also
yeah.
So write it, and then when I feel it's done or I can move on, I read it out loud and then I go, mm-hmm. oh no, that doesn't sound right. Or mm-hmm. So I think there's a back and forth, but mm-hmm. I think sound might be more central to your work, Charlotte.
Yeah, it's really an embodied process for me. Yeah. Like, so I feel the words, right? Mm-hmm. So, it's a fragmented process, but I don't see it separately. So sometimes I see them, sometimes I hear them, but always I feel them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you just kind of know, it's more intuitive for me, right? Mm-hmm. Where the, mm-hmm. what word feels right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And what about, so how do you feel being amongst, I mean, it's interesting, we're actually talking about it being visual somehow, as well as being oral and whatever, mm-hmm. Sonar? So tonal? I'm too tired to think.
Aural.
Because oral, there you go.
Oral,
not
right.
O-R, oral, exactly. to be included within visual culture and being at the National Art Gallery, which is again has been traditionally a place of, you know, two-dimensional, three-dimensional mm-hmm. artwork. Yeah. What's that relationship for you like in terms of entering that space or being part of that space and dealing with visual artists and talking? And I mean, you've brought a visual part to your piece.
I mean, we talked about this a lot at the opening last night. I know that we're talking from way in the past whenever this airs, but last night I've had many conversations with writers and non-writers and just patrons and guests who said, mm-hmm. I love that the platform is opening up a little bit, you mm-hmm. know, to allow other mediums to come in. And I know that this is something that couldn't have been done right away, mm-hmm. you know, so I totally get, you know, that it couldn't have happened right away. But I'm really pleased that it's happening now on the trajectory, like mm-hmm. in the arc of whatever the National Art Gallery, however it functions in the country, because writing is so important to our national identity. And I feel like writers don't necessarily have a hub like the visual mm-hmm. Arts culture does have here
in
the
community. Yeah, that's true. I hadn't thought about that.
And I have my press, Poinciana Paper Press, mm-hmm. and I really wanted to be like a hub at some mm-hmm. point for book arts and for writing, mm-hmm. but there isn't like a hub for mm-hmm. us. And mm-hmm. So it's really exciting that the National Art Gallery can sort of take on that role for us a little bit.
Well, I keep telling poets they should organize open mic nights in the amphitheater. So
now
the call's going out there, right?
Yeah.
I keep telling, because my fear is, again, and I would love the National Art Gallery to be that too.
Yeah.
But my anxiety rather than fear, I would say, is that, you know, everyone working there and myself as the director, my expertise is in visual art. That's what I was trained
right.
in. That's what I got my master's in. That's what I've done my whole life. I know about visual art.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that much about poetry or music, and so it's anxiety making to think how do I curate that? How do I manage
that?
I need a whole other team, basically.
Right. Writer curator, because you do have someone curating the film mm-hmm. now.
Exactly.
The film night.
Exactly.
Travolta's
curating the films, and we're trying
great.
To collaborate with people to do that.
That shows like great care and mm-hmm. respect for the craft to mm-hmm. not take on something that you don't feel prepped to do.
Right.
So
eventually we need to grow the staff, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
and that actually leads into, I know the chairman spoke to it at the opening very briefly, is that we're going to enter into a capital campaign to build a new building because we just have run out of, like, we don't have the capacity to expand the way we want to, right?
Yeah. And that's exciting.
Yeah, it's really exciting, but also terrifying. So.
But even just opening up in the NE, just saying, you know, we want writers and mm-hmm. we'll present it in any way that we see fit, because I think we presented sort of these physical manifestations mm-hmm. in the gallery, but then there are other writers who will be performing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
In the amphitheater. And mm-hmm. I think, like, just having that openness is exciting for those of us who want to present our work visually.
Mm-hmm.
You want to add? I can keep going, but I'm dominating.
I think it's exciting to see it in the space, mm-hmm. and I think poetry is often undervalued, mm-hmm. whereas I see poetry as a really accessible form of expression,
yes.
right? And I always remember Audre Lorde, right, the Black American feminist poet, mm-hmm. who said poetry is not a luxury, right? Mm-hmm. Like I write to survive often,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I write about things that can't live inside me anymore,
mm-hmm.
and I know that that's true for many people who maybe don't write, right? But poetry is easy in the sense that it's accessible, right? A piece of paper, a pencil, right? And the way that words come to you, and in this case, you know, they come out of trauma, right? But that's not always the case. And poetry can also be really joyful.
Absolutely.
And I think that, and another really amazing Canadian Indigenous poet, Lee Marigal, who said, we were talking about poetry, and she said to me, she's like, you know, every second Indian is a poet. And Lee is like, no nonsense, but you, people write, and they don't always feel comfortable mm-hmm. bringing that writing to share to a space, and it, mm-hmm. making that space for those words,
yeah.
I think is really important.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I think so, too. I'm interesting. And why, as poets, do you feel you can express yourself in poetry, and what did you specifically choose to not do prose, or was it just poetry found you? Because I think probably that's what makes poetry, or that's why people think it's a luxury, is because a bit like art, they think it's, you have to know something. You have to know about the iambic pentameter.
Right.
You know,
I mean, that could be fun.
Or haiku or whatever, you know, so there's
right.
this.
Those things could be fun, especially mm-hmm. if you get to sort of like turn it on its head and make fun of it. Mm.
So I think people, mm-hmm. I mean, again, even though like writing's not easy, we know that.
No.
You know, I think the idea of just writing a story is somehow easier, or reading a story, because it's just like a narrative. Like I tell you, I went to the store yesterday, blah, blah,
kind
and it's
of.
Got a, it's got a structure that everyone learns mm-hmm. somehow, whereas poetry is more elusive, I think. Or so did poetry find you? Did you just find that that's how you...
I like writing everything, yeah. but fiction writers really hate poets who try to write fiction. Mm-hmm. And by try, I mean who write fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to write it. like my workshops with fiction writers, with my fiction, they are like very confused and infuriated. Mm-hmm. But the other people in the workshop are like, man, this was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And the... So, I don't know. I do have a couple of... when you said living with your work, Charlotte, I have like three fiction pieces that I've been living with for 8 years, 8 to 10 years, and I just haven't started writing them yet. And mm-hmm. that's partly because I sometimes still like internalize those like horrible workshops. Like I had a terrible workshop with, I forgot the name of the, so this is right bad that I forgot her name, but it's the survival tactic.
I was going to say, you've locked that away and you don't want to remember it.
She wrote In the Cut, and she came to Pratt to do a workshop, and she just eviscerated me. If I hadn't been in my senior year, I probably would have dropped out, but I was like, ah, you don't like me, it's fine.
That's just bad teaching.
It's just bad. It was really uncomfortable.
Yeah, really, that's not nice.
But it's okay.
Priyanka Chopra?
No, that's not her.
I know, that's The Cut. Yeah, sorry.
In the Cut.
In the Cut. Yeah, no, that's what I Googled, but I was like...
They made a movie out of it with, like, Meg Ryan and Mark Ruffalo. It's actually,
well,
like, a
go.
Great book, and I was super sad about not getting along well with her. But anyway, so poetry's just been, like, more successfully received, and so I do it, but I know that there are these other...
Suzanne Moore,
thank you. There are these other sort of... Sorry, I mean, Suzanne, you're not listening, because you don't care, but you have movie rights, but like, you know, I was nominated for an award for my poetry book, and it has prose poems in it, so
yeah,
just saying,
so deal with it.
There you go.
And what about,
I don't hang on to things,
take that.
Yeah.
And what about you, Charlotte, in terms of poetry as
yeah.
a form of expression?
I write creative mm-hmm. nonfiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so if they don't like it, too bad.
yeah.
And
yeah.
I write prose poems as well, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
And like stream of consciousness poems.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I am not, though, you know, I was an English major, I am not a quote unquote trained poet.
Mm-hmm.
And intentionally
mm-hmm.
at this point, mm-hmm. because I started writing poetry as a form of expression when I was very, very young.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put it away, right? And I went back to school, ironically. And when I was asked to write essays about decolonial topics and about Black feminist topics and you know, diaspora and trauma, it didn't come out
mm-hmm.
In an academic mm-hmm. essay form. It
mm-hmm.
came out in poetry. And so I fought really hard in an academic space to have that form of expression and creative work recognized at
mm-hmm.
my university or the university that I'm studying at, because people seem to think that creative work is easier. They think that, you know, it's easy to write poetry, that it just
spit it out on a page and you're done,
right?
Yeah, you just finger paint.
In our case, you just bang a couple of nails on the wall and hang some pictures out.
Yeah, it's so easy, right? And that's a huge misconception.
Yeah, yeah,
huge.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it does come to me because mm-hmm. it's the way that feels the most mm-hmm. comfortable for me mm-hmm. to express a lot of really, like I'm mm-hmm. in a phase right now where I'm writing a larger piece about traumatic engagement with hidden stories, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly in our context mm-hmm. here, we have a practice of not talking about things. I mean, that's yes. also a global practice, but yeah. you know, there are particular things in the Caribbean, in the Bahamas that we don't talk about, yeah. right? Yes. And those things are generally, you know...
I didn't know my father was adopted until I was 22.
Yeah. Who your family is, who you're related to, right?
Yeah.
Who you're actually related to.
Who you're actually related to, exactly.
Even though we ask certain questions yeah. to make sure yeah. we know who that is.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, we don't like to talk so much about race in particular mm-hmm. contexts. Yeah, we don't yeah. want to talk about sexual abuse, particularly not child sexual abuse.
Absolutely.
And we don't want to talk about misogyny. We mm-hmm. don't want to talk about, you know, patriarchy, and we don't mm-hmm. want to talk about how our mothers were taught not to be creatives,
right? Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, well, and if so, they were, you know, it was just crafting.
Yeah, that's no, right. exactly. That's what I realized through the show, talking to so many Bahamian artists, so many Bahamian practitioners. So many of their parents, whether, you know, John Cox, Kendra Furup, like all these, mm-hmm. I mean, I could name a ton of them, all their parents, fathers as well as mothers, mm-hmm. but I think, you know, again, fathers had a bit more, but were, so many of them were creatives, but mm-hmm. never would have self-identified that mm-hmm. way. They were dressmakers, they were mm-hmm. masons, they were architects, you know, mm-hmm. all these different forms of creative expression.
Yes.
And it just struck me, because again, doing the show, it's like suddenly I'd say, well, what about your parents? And did they... And just hearing over and over again, mm-hmm. oh, yeah, she was a seamstress, yep. or she was a hairdresser, or, yep. you know, whatever. Like, all these things are about working with your hands, being
forming,
creative. Being
yeah.
creative.
Yeah.
And that it was sort of denied in a yeah. way to say.
And then, too, even, like, men, boat building. Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Masonry.
And
everything, and it's
yeah,
just,
no,
like,
exactly. Woodworking, like,
right.
you know.
So these sort of, like, crafts. Yeah. Craft has such
well, and
a,
that yes. that then goes over. I mean, we're going to get 3 minutes, so it's a whole
right.
other show. But it goes over into junk canoe, right? So many junk
oh,
canoe
yes.
artists
yes.
who
absolutely.
Don't think they're artists,
yes.
and I'll
yes.
say, no, you're an artist.
You're an
oh
artist.
No, it's
yes.
my hobby. This is my
right.
And it's like, no, you're
that's
not acknowledging this incredible
yes.
thing you're
type.
Doing. This mm-hmm. incredible yeah. thing you're doing, which is high art in
it
its
really,
way. Right?
It really was amazing to bring junk canoe into the gallery that time for Jackson's show. That was just. I mean, it made me see it differently, which was really interesting. I mean, because I've seen obviously. Grown up watching mm-hmm. junk canoe and going to see junk canoe and then mm-hmm. and then seeing it in the gallery space, and I think that must have been a really big impact for everyone, especially mm-hmm. for people mm-hmm. who have been doing it their whole lives.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say that about the gallery and making it accessible and open, right? Because I think there's also a misconception, though it reigns in certain parts of the art world, that there is high art mm-hmm. and other art,
right? Mm-hmm.
Right, and that puts people in a place, right, of discomfort, and it keeps them at arm's length
sure,
from
course.
Their own creativity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so many makers, you know, don't ever come into an art exhibition space, mm-hmm. right? So I think that's
they think
really
it's other.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we actually, while we're talking about, we're going to, he actually was on the show now because I'm in the future. We at the same time as the National Exhibition, we have a show on in the project space mm-hmm. called Second to None by
yes.
a junk canoe artist who has, like, found his creative expression and is making works outside of his junk canoe works.
Cool.
And it's really, really exciting. So if you come to see the NE, go also to see Second to None by Carlos Bain. So good thing that you reminded me about that.
Mm-hmm.
We have come to the end. It's always like,
it's so
you know what? I
that
need to
so
ask
fast.
Guardian
yeah.
to give me 2 hours because it's always at the end when we start like getting into the good stuff after
yeah.
we've sort of talked about the work and then we start to get into those deep discussions. I just want to thank you both so much. For your work, for your presence, for your engagement, and for joining us here tonight.
Thanks
so
for
thank
having
you.
Us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank
yeah,
you.
It's been a pleasure.
So Charlotte and Sonia, Charlotte Hene and Sonia Farmer, both artists in the National Exhibition. They both have collaborative projects. Charlotte's is entitled Botanical of Grief, and that's a collaboration with Yasmin Glinton. And Sonia's is The Red Thread Cycle in collaboration with Shivani Ramlishan. So those are just two of like the 30 works that are on display in the National Art Gallery right now. I really encourage everyone to come down and not just, again, see the National Exhibition, but see the Permanent Collection, which is an awesome show curated by two of our assistant curators, to see the Second to None by Carla Spain. There's always so much going on at the NAGB and so many other things. We spoke about the film series very briefly. briefly and how we have a Bahamian curator doing the films now. And we have talks, we have workshops, we have all kinds of stuff. So come on down, check out the website, www.nagb.org.bs. And just join the National Art Gallery, whether as a visitor, as a member, have your kids come, whatever that might be. There's so many ways, and it's, you know, I sound like I'm biased because I work there, but it's an awesome, awesome place for all Bahamians. So please join us there. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show where we speak about visual and other forms of culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.